mashed potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Fall, Emily the Criminal, Mac and Rita, Rogue Agent, and I Am Groot. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Michael Mann's 1995 film Heat. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news is the Ezra Miller problem. That is happening to Warner Brothers as we speak. As you know, last week we talked about how Warner Brothers Discovery is now trying to refocus their efforts. And one of the things they're doing is they're scaling back things that are going direct to HBO Max. They got rid of the Batgirl movie, and they're talking about next year rebranding HBO Max and Discovery Plus as kind of one service that's all-encompassing, which, like I said, that's fraught with problems already. But one of the reasons they killed Batgirl as a movie was because they didn't feel it was big enough or important enough to put out in theaters, but they didn't want to release it on HBO Max. Plus, it was also a good tax write-off for them. At the time, the CEO of Warner Brothers, the new CEO of Warner Brothers Discovery, David Zaslav, had a whole lot of great things to say about the upcoming DC slate of movies, including Shazam and Black Adam. But he also threw behind The Flash. Now, they've been trying to do a Flash movie for half of a decade. I mean, ever since they announced the DC Extended Universe, they've been developing this Flash movie. They've been dropping it into Batman vs. Superman, and they've been dropping it into Justice League. And then, of course, the COVID-19 pandemic happened, and they had to delay some of their superhero movies. They wrapped the shooting of Flash with Ezra Miller as the lead character, Barry Allen, like last October. And of course, they did reshoots recently. But the problem with Ezra Miller is they've been getting in a lot of trouble lately. And the latest thing that happened, which ironically, the latest problem that's shown up isn't even something that happened terribly recently. It happened in May. Ezra Miller apparently had stolen some, or allegedly stolen some, alcohol from this house. And after looking at evidence and interviewing witnesses or people at the scene, the police served them with a warrant for felony burglary. And the reason this is just another nail in the coffin is because Ezra Miller was already exposed with the story in Rolling Stone about them bringing this mother and her children from Hawaii to their ranch in Vermont, and supposedly the conditions are allegedly unsafe. The father of the kids, who's estranged from the mother, and we're talking like five-year-olds, you know, like not like teenagers, but little kids. And the father, who's back in Hawaii, did not approve of this. And that puts Ezra Miller right at the epicenter of that. Plus a whole bunch of stories that had come out earlier this year when they were in Hawaii. They had gotten arrested a couple times. And, you know, going all the way back to last year in the spring, they were in Iceland and they choked a woman outside of an Icelandic bar. So it is clear Ezra Miller is not behaving above board. And it also seems pretty clear that they're not going to change. And there's probably serious problems. There's probably some mental health issues. I mean, I'm not a doctor. I'm just saying these are things that you'd want to screen this person for. But there's probably some mental health issues. There's probably substance abuse. There's got to be a lot of problems going on here. And already people were complaining and worrying what's going to happen with the Flash movie. This isn't like when Kevin Spacey got removed out of All the Money in the World and they just replaced him with Christopher Plummer. I mean, you can't replace Ezra Miller in The Flash. I mean, they're in like every scene and multiple scenes, sometimes multiple versions of the character in scenes. And I mean, you'd have to reshoot the whole movie pretty much. I mean, maybe you could get somebody like, you know, like somebody at least close to their body shape, like, you know, Daniel Radcliffe or somebody like that. But, you know, if you were to put somebody like Kevin Hart It has, you'd have to reshoot the whole thing because there's no way Kevin Hart could stand in for Ezra Miller. So right now, Warner Brothers seems like they got three options. They either get Ezra Miller to do a mea culpa and get some help and at least put that out in public so that there's some goodwill, or just go ahead and finish the movie with very minimal involvement of press with Ezra Miller, or just can the movie altogether, which could happen. Because here's the thing. I don't think that there's a way to release this movie without having all this very nasty stuff. If you go read like the in-depth reports of some of these things, this is not just a couple fights in a bar. This is like chronic abusive behavior and weird behavior, some of it involving kids. So I would not be surprised if this movie just is tainted from here on out. And you know what? I put this on Warner Brothers. I put this on Warner Brothers and the producers and the executive producers for not realizing this earlier without sending it. At some point after they choked a woman out in Iceland, somebody should have stopped and said, you know, maybe this person shouldn't be headlining our movie and be in every freaking frame of our film that we are now not going to be able to release in a couple years. So we'll see what happens with this Ezra Miller thing, but it's not going to end well. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first movie I want to talk about is Maneater, which is coming to theaters and VOD on August 26th, so just in a couple weeks.
Thank you.
Yes, yeah, it's beautiful.
What was that?
Okay.
Guys, it's fine. Dolphins are a good sign.
Really? Oh my God!
This is a shark movie. I'm always down for a good shark movie. And I say good shark movie. I don't count Sharknado in there. I know I got into the fun bits of Sharknado. I mean, Sharknado was a schlocky, silly movie. I'm talking about this looks like a legitimate man-eating shark kind of movie. It reminds me of, obviously, you know, everyone thinks of Jaws. Even you listen to the beginning of that trailer and it evokes Jaws, the soundtrack. But it reminds me of stuff like The Shallows, which came out a couple years ago, right at the end of the summer. And that's the one with Blake Lively being stalked by a great white shark. I mean, I love a good shark movie. 47 Meters Down's another good shark movie. I don't know if this is any good, but at least it looks like it's a bona fide shark movie. So this one, I might try and cover it in a couple weeks. It looks interesting. And you get to see Nikki Whalen in a bikini, which that's always good too. Now to take a more serious tone, the other movie I want to talk about is Till, which is coming to theaters on October 14th.
The body of Emmett Lewis Till has been found dead.
Can I at least just fix him up a bit?
No, they have to see it for themselves.
How is risking your life going to help them?
Those pictures of your son change people's lives.
The lynching of my son has shown me that what happens to any of us anywhere in the world had better be the business of us all.
This tells the tragic story of Emmett Till, who was kind of in the wrong place at the wrong time and did the wrong thing for a black person in the South back in the 50s. And he was lynched. He was attacked and beaten and killed. And it's absolutely worth knowing the story, but it's also it's about the mother trying to get justice and notoriety so he didn't die in vain. And it looks like it's going to be heartbreaking, but this is real stuff that happened. And I mean, this didn't happen that long ago. This happened in people's lifetime. There might be people listening to the radio right now who knew people who were involved in this or were in town when this happened. And this is recent history. This is not ancient history. And this is the kind of thing that people need to see. I think it's worth seeing. I don't know if the movie's any good. It looks like it's going to be a tough watch because it's going to be emotional, but it's absolutely worth knowing and knowing the history of race relations in this country. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about the films Mac and Rita and Emily the Criminal. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews this week. And there's a lot of small stuff out there. There's actually quite a few movies being released in the theaters, just no huge movies. We don't have another Top Gun or another superhero movie. And they're smaller. They're probably going to come in under stuff like even Bullet Train from last weekend. And Mac and Rita is one of them, although it does star a pretty big name, which is Diane Keaton. But in Mac and Rita, a 30-year-old influencer accidentally wishes to be an older version of herself and is transformed into a 70-year-old woman.
I grew up always feeling like I was an older woman trapped in the body of a little girl.
Oh! Oh my God! Somebody help me! This is not me!
So you were thinking about old lady stuff and you turned into one. So he should be able to turn you back into you.
Where did he go?
We're never gonna find him.
Mac.
Coming.
Are you sick? You sound weird.
Whoa. Well, hello. I'm Mac's Aunt Rita.
One of the things that irritated me about this movie, let's just start with that. Let me just go right in there. Why pussyfoot around? One of the things that annoyed me is this was like one of like five movies I've seen recently. I mean, just in the short span of a couple weeks, where the main character was an influencer. And look, I'm not an influencer. I guess I have a certain level of influence, and I have been given perks because of my position of influence. I used to tweet a lot of stuff, and I was asked to do some tweeting, and I did, and promoted some things, and got a little bit of swag. But I'm not making, I never made money off of it as an influencer. But I don't have a TikTok account, and I don't do Insta. But the thing is, it's annoying for me to see movies about influencers now, because that's such the trendy thing. It's sort of like when, you know, about 10 years ago, every TV series like, oh, maybe we should call an Uber. Everyone like worked to get Uber mentioned in their thing so they sounded relevant. And the same thing happens whenever they have a movie or a TV series, especially when they revive these TV series, like when they revived Murphy Brown, they had to have somebody there going, I'm the social media advisor. I'm going to be the social media guru. And I'm like, oh, it's so forced. It reminds me of when I was a kid and I'd be in music class in school. And this was in the 80s, and it was the whitest school around. It was a very white neighborhood I grew up in, and it was a white teachers and everything. And the music teacher would come in and go, well, we thought we'd be cool and we'd do a rap. Come on, kids. Here we go. And it was the worst rap that ever happened in the history of the planet. Of course, in the whitest suburb on the planet. So that's what it feels like when they force these Instagram type characters in there and they never do them realistically. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know any influencers. Maybe this is realistic. I'm in the wrong business if it is. Anyways, yeah, that's how she makes her money. And she just wants to be a writer. So she's going to do essays. And I complained about this with Not Okay not too long ago. But it did feel like it was just glomming onto buzzwords. Now, this is directed by Katie Esselton, who is best known, I think, at least I know her best, as being an actress in The League on FX. And she's actually directed a couple movies. She directed The Freebie with her and Dax Shepard about 10 years ago. And then she directed a movie called Black Rock, which isn't a bad little thriller, actually, if you can catch that. It's been on and off Netflix over the years. But this one is a much more lighthearted thing. Her stuff tends to be a little bit darker, at least her first two movies were. But this one's a little more lighthearted, and it's supposed to be cute. And it's basically Big. I mean, it's the story of Big. Only it's not Big, it's old. I mean, to the point that part of the story is her trying to find this guy who had this tanning bed that she sat in, and that's what did it, which is very similar to Tom Hanks' character tracking down the Zoltar machine. But the problem with this movie is, even though it's a cute story, it leans too into the trendy LA moments, which is annoying to anybody who isn't in LA. But they lay it on so thick. And, you know, God bless Diane Keaton. I think she's a wonderful actor, and she is game for anything. And she really is brave in this. She does everything she possibly can to make the movie work. But in doing so, she's untethered, and so she overdoes it. There was a movie, I can't even remember what it was, but it was where she was on a computer. It was about 6 or 7 or 10 years ago. And she accidentally kept going into like an adult friend finder site. And it was supposed to be wacky and silly, but it's clear Diane Keaton didn't know exactly what this kind of site was. And she'd never done it. So she was doing whatever she could. And she was big and she was, you know, really giving it her all. But it just wasn't funny. And just because an actor will do stuff doesn't mean you need to make her do it. So, you know, while Diane Keaton gives it her all, the derivative plot and the forced slapstick just make this movie more cringeworthy than worthy. So I'm going to have to say Mac and Rita sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on and talk about Emily the Criminal. Aubrey Plaza plays a woman struggling to make ends meet who slides into the criminal underworld.
I need a real job, just to, like, pay my loans.
Emily, yo, let me hook you up.
In the next hour, you will make 200 cash, but you will have to do something illegal. You won't be in danger, but you will be breaking the law. Tomorrow, you have the option to do another job, okay?
What do I have to do? You make that much selling TVs.
Sometimes TVs, sometimes other things.
You could show me how to do it.
None of this is safe.
First of all, can I talk a little bit about Aubrey Plaza? I respect her as an actress, mainly because she started off as a comedian. And she had a very deadpan delivery. But, you know, after doing stuff on, like, Parks and Rec, which she was hilarious in, she has really been trying to do some significant acting. I mean, she's been in some goofy movies. Like, she was in that one movie with Anna Kendrick where they were Frank and Dave Need Wedding Dates or whatever, the Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates. And then she was in the Child's Play remake playing the mom, which just unnerved me because I remember when she was like a 19-year-old kid on the stand-up circuit. But she really does a dramatic performance here. She does a good job. She really has some acting chops on her. And she gets to show them off in this movie. She doesn't always get that. And it's difficult for an actress to do the big name movies, but also to do the independent stuff. And she manages to do both. She isn't as embraced as a mainstream lead actor, but she's played some off-kilter roles that are even off-kilter for Aubrey Plaza. But, you know, she really kind of holds this story together because she's just this woman trying to make ends meet. And she's got crippling debt from student loans. And the other thing this movie does is, without being preachy about it, it kind of exposes some of the inequalities that have been hardwired into our system. Like I said, the crippling student loan debt with incredibly high interest rates that makes it impossible to pay off. Or, like, the fact that there's these jobs that she wants, and then she, you know, finds out that they're internships, so they don't pay. And they're like, well, you're just being a little spoiled. And I'm like, no, you should pay people. The internships are BS, because that's for elite people who can afford it. But people who are really trying to work and get experience, you need to pay people for their time. We're making people work for free is nonsense. But, you know, one of the biggest defenders of that is Hollywood itself. So good for them for calling them out on this kind of stuff. But, no, I think this is actually a really interesting movie because it does go into that criminal element. It does go into that underworld, but it doesn't overdo it. It doesn't make it over the top and ridiculous. I mean, this is surprisingly topical, but it's not preachy. And the movie makes its points while allowing for some interesting character moments. So I'm going to have to say I was surprised at how compelling it was, and 90% of that is on Aubrey Plaza's shoulders, and I think she does a great job, so I'm going to have to say Emily the Criminal rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Fall, and I Am Groot. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next film on the list, which is Fall. I think this is getting the widest release this week. It's probably the highest profile one, no pun intended. After a personal tragedy, two women climb a 2,000-foot television tower and get stuck at the top.
I have something that's planned, and I need a partner in crime.
The B67 TV tower.
I haven't climbed since...
Becky,
if you don't confront your fears, you are always going to be afraid.
Let's do it. Let's climb your stupid tower.
Oh, I'm so excited! Oh my god! Oh my god!
Every hour that passes, the weaker we get.
If anyone called 911, they'd be here by now.
There was a movie that came out, I think it was in 2015, which was called The Walk. And it was about Philippe Pettit, I think was his name, who was this French acrobat who strung a wire between the World Trade Center, the two towers back in the 70s, and walked across it with no safety harness. And they made a documentary about this years before that called Man on Wire, which is a fascinating documentary. But then they made a narrative feature, and it was directed by Robert Zemeckis. And it's funny, I think it's on like Amazon Prime now or something like that, so you can watch it now, but it's not that impressive of a movie on a small screen. Even a big TV screen, it's not as impressive of a movie. That was a movie you needed to see in IMAX 3D specifically, because that movie put you on the top of the World Trade Center, and they did stuff with forced perspective and depth of field, and you really felt like you were up there. There are scenes where they dip down and they look down, and I could feel when I went to go see that movie, the back of my legs would start to tingle, because everybody somewhere in them has a little degree of acrophobia, and it's unnerving. Now, I mean, I'm a big fat guy now. I know that. And so there have been times where I realized I can't do this. I was once riding a roller coaster with my son. It was in Cedar Point, which is a huge roller coaster place. I won't say the name of the roller coaster, but the bar slipped while we were riding. And I was freaking terrified because I thought I was going to die. Now, there was a little seatbelt, but the seatbelt was like from the 80s. So I'm like, woo. And then suddenly it unlatches by a notch. And then I'm like, oh God, and I'm holding on tightly for dear life. And then another time they have these big things where they're like 300 feet in the air and you're on these little seats and you hang down. And I rode that with one of my other sons and I'm like, okay, I think I'm done with the high stuff now. And I've done stuff like I've ridden the stuff on the top of the stratosphere in Las Vegas, which is like 1,000 feet up or something like that. I don't know how tall it is off the top of my head, but that does something to you when you're on the edge of something like that. And one of the things that Fall does very, very well is when the girls go to the tower and start climbing up, you really feel it. And I had the tingling in the back of my legs. I only saw this at home. I was sent a screener. I can't imagine how impressive this would be on the big screen. So that really is the strength of the movie. And that's in that first, well, it's kind of the second act of the movie. It's them climbing the tower. Because the story, it has this background story where they were like climbing El Capitan, and one of the two women's husband falls, and that's, they're trying to overcome this, and in order to do so, sort of therapeutically, they're climbing this tower. But they're also not the safest people about it. If you know anything about rock climbing, which I don't go rock climbing, but at least I understand about having belay lines and footholds and places that you can anchor yourself to. And even if you're going to do something like free climb, like a free solo in the movie Free Solo, which is about a guy climbing with no ropes or whatever, climbing El Capitan. That movie shows you the importance of safety. And even though a lot of free solo climbers have died by falling, it shows that you can't be cavalier about it. You have to be focused the whole time. And the characters in this really aren't. But I think it's more as a statement of the common adrenaline junkie wanting that thrill and forgoing safety in the process, because that's kind of what this one character does. And so I think it's realistic. There's stupid moves that these people do, but when has something being stupid stopped people from doing it? People do stupid things all the time in this world. Now, the movie itself is set up kind of in multiple different types of movies. The beginning of it plays almost like a horror movie. It feels like they're going into like Texas Chainsaw Massacre or The Hills Have Eyes, where they have this foreboding thing in the way they shoot, and they're out in the desert, and the saturated color, and the warnings from the locals, and as they're climbing the thing, you see these rickety bolts because it's an abandoned tower. So it's like a horror movie there, and then it becomes a suspense movie as they climb, which is incredibly effective, and then it becomes a survival movie, where they're trying to live up there until somebody notices that they're there, because the ladder collapses. And that's when it becomes something like Frozen, not the musical, the one by Adam Green about the people stuck on the ski lift, or something like Open Water, where the people are left in shark-infested waters after a diving team left. And then it does slow down a little bit. Now, there's enough character things that go on that I think it kind of balances, and it has a point, and there's enough twists and turns and movements in the plot, so it's not just us waiting for people to die or get saved. There's something more to it, but that's the least powerful of the moments. The best part really is the climb. And I'm very curious to see what people would say seeing that in a theater, because it's impressive. It's very few movies come out that I will say definitively you need to see in the theater and not at home. And this is one I would suggest taking a shot to go see. I mean, it's strongest with these climbing sequences, triggering acrophobia, and it manages to balance its characters enough to follow through with the plot. So I'm going to say Fall kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about I Am Groot. Disney Plus features this series of short films about baby Groot as he interacts with aliens, space, and himself. This is on Disney Plus, and it dropped midweek, so it's been out for a couple days. And these are just short films. There's like five of them. It reminds me of those Scrat adventures. Disney Plus is, I think they're starting to do this. They did this with some Olaf stuff from the other Frozen. And there were short films, like four or five different short, like couple minute things. These are like each 5 minutes long. And it's little adventures of Groot. Now, there's not a whole lot of dialogue, as you heard from the trailer. But there's a whole lot of interaction. And, I mean, it's animated like the Guardians of the Galaxy movies are. And there's a couple cameos in one of them. Rocket shows up. Another one, Drax, is in the background. But it's mainly about Groot getting into trouble or scraping into something. There's one where he's in his jammies. It takes place on the ship for the Guardians of the Galaxy. And there's something in the ship that he's interacting with, but it wakes him up in the middle of the night. So he's in his gym jams. And I could watch an entire movie of Baby Groot in his gym jams. I think that would be hilarious. But, you know, these are cute. I mean, they're not deep stories, and they're not heavy characterized moments. They're just fun little vignettes. And basically, if you saw Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and you enjoyed the opening credit sequence with Baby Groot dancing, it's that sort of level. I mean, so it certainly feels like it has that same connective tissue. And that's what's a lot of fun with this movie. It's cute. I mean, they're like I said, you watch the entire thing in like a half hour or 45 minutes. It's pretty short. But it's also a lot of fun. So I love the fact that Disney is going back to doing short cartoons, because that's what they kind of started doing back in the day during when you would be able to do stuff before movies. And while these aren't necessarily leading into films, it's nice that Disney is still cranking out short films and cartoon type content. And that's kind of what this falls into, even though it's CGI photorealistic animation. So, you know, these short segments are a lot of fun and quite adorable. I'm going to have to say that I Am Groot rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Rogue Agent and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Heat. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the movie reviews with Rogue Agent. Gemma Arterton plays a high-powered career woman in London who is duped by a con man pretending to be a secret agent.
My real name is Robert Freeguard. I am an officer in the British Security Services, MI5.
Where are we?
One last mission.
Robert Freeguard has kidnapped my daughter.
I need you to help me find him.
We work together.
We have just one shot at this.
So go on then.
What are you hiding?
He never, ever stops.
This is actually based on a true story, and I wasn't familiar with it. Whenever I see a movie and then it says it's based on a true story, especially if it has a little thing at the end and it tells what actually happens to some of the people, I went back and I looked it up. You know, I mean, I went to Google University and I learned about it myself. And there are certain things that are very accurate with this movie, but it's basically about this con man. It starts out in the early 1990s where he uses the turmoil in Northern Ireland to pretend to be an undercover MI5 agent. His plan is to get people who are can be part of his team, and he will kind of put them in their own little missions and isolate them from their families, and then use them to get money from their families to help out with these missions or what have you. But he would also go in and seduce women. And one of the things that was kind of a brilliant move on his part, even though he was a jerk for doing this, was he would do the whole secret agent thing, and then he could say, well, people are going to do this, and people are going to question this, and they're going to say I'm not real, and blah, blah, blah. And it gives that weird level of plausible deniability. Plus, he was a master at manipulating people, finding whatever your weakness is and chiseling into there and then finding his way in. And one of the things, when he finally gets in touch with Gemma Arterton's character, she's a solicitor. She's an attorney for this high-powered company. And you think, well, she's smart. And as an attorney, you should be dubious of everything. I mean, you should not be susceptible to the grifts, so to speak. But the reality is, even very intelligent people will believe some crazy things. And there's a lot of people who, sometimes even the smarter you are, the more easily you're taken in to this, because you always want to see something greater than the mundane world around you. That's why conspiracy theories are abound everywhere. And a lot of people are like, you know, the internet and Facebook and QAnon and blah, blah, blah. Conspiracy theories have been around long before the internet even existed. There have always been conspiracy theories that will seduce people, especially those that are smart enough to want to see something greater in a cloud. They want to see formations in the cloud, and they start connecting dots that are there, but maybe aren't really connected. And, anybody can be taken in by this kind of thing, especially if somebody's good at manipulating people. And part of it is, I love Gemma Arterton anyways. I'd watched her in almost any movie that's around. And I think it's really interesting because she used to be a Bond girl. She was a Bond girl in Quantum of Solace. Played Strawberry Fields. That's a great Bond girl name. Plus, there's a scene in there where she's, you know, when they're in their honeymoon phase of when she's in this relationship with this guy, where they're playing music and she's sort of dancing on the bed in a nightgown. I could watch 2 hours of that myself, just because I'm a pervert and I think she's an adorable woman. So, okay, enough leching on Gemma Arterton. The movie itself is interesting. It takes a while to sort of figure out what the movie is. And unfortunately, it's one of those movies, to explain what it is about this guy who's a con man, you kind of have to show your hand. I went in knowing nothing about the movie, so I kept trying to have to refocus my attention on what's this movie about. But again, it's realistic things, and it shows how hard it is to track that kind of stuff down. Now, I'm not any sort of legal expert in America, let alone the UK, so that makes it even more believable. I just assume what they're telling me is true. But it's a neat movie. It's a little bit of a slow burn, and it does take a little bit too long. It's sort of like how I said Fall was like, you know, it starts off as a horror movie, and then it's a suspense thriller, and then it's a survival movie. Well, this one is starting off as what you think is actually a spy movie, and then it turns into a love story, and then it turns into this con man story, and then it turns into a revenge movie. So it has all these different iterations, but it's compelling. It's certainly worth watching. It even though it does run a bit too long and it could have been more tightly written, I don't feel like I wasted my time. It's not something you have to slag through. While it overstays its welcome a little bit too much, Arterton does a great job bringing a level of humanity and understanding to the would-be victim. Rogue Agent kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on Heat, the 1995 heist film by Michael Mann. The reason I'm covering it is Heat is getting a 4K release this week. Now, I don't have the 4K release, But I, you know, it's one of those movies. Heat has been a blind spot for me literally for decades. It's one of these movies that people talk about all the time. And I know it's got great reverence from critics. Film Twitter loves Heat. And I'd never seen it. You know, everybody has their blind spots. The 90s have a lot of blind spots for me because I was getting married at that time. And so you tend to have other things that you're worrying about than going to go see a 3-hour movie in theaters. So I went ahead and I watched it for the first time. I'd never seen it. And it's significant back then because it was the first time since The Godfather 2 that Robert De Niro and Al Pacino were in the same movie. But in Godfather 2, they didn't share the screen because they existed in two different eras. But they were in the same movie. And this is the first time they actually share the screen. And it was kind of significant. And when you watch the movie and they finally come face to face, you can tell that Michael Mann milks that a little bit. You know, after this, there are a whole bunch of movies, good and bad, of De Niro and Pacino sharing the screen. So that was nothing new, but Heat was the very first one. Michael Mann directs this 1995 heist thriller that examines the lives and loyalties of both cops and robbers.
You want to be making moves on the street, have no attachments, allow nothing to be in your life that you cannot walk out on in 30 seconds flat if you spot the heat around the corner.
Recognize the M.O.?
M.O. is that they're good. If you think these guys are scoring more than passing through, I doubt it.
What do we got?
Bank is worth the risk. We should take it down.
I want full surveillance, 24 hours, round the clock. We never close, open 7 days a week.
It's a really well-done movie, mainly because it does what Michael Mann is known for. And even though I don't think he's always great at doing this, I'm not a big Michael Mann fan, but he juggles a bunch of different characters. And he does so very well that even the ones that don't get a lot of screen time, you feel like you know. And it's gritty. You know, it's a cop movie. De Niro plays the criminal who masterminds all these heists, who's based on an actual person who did his work in the 50s and 60s as a criminal. And then Pacino plays the cop or the detective who's going after him. And, you know, he juxtaposes the two of them. And whereas, you know, Pacino is struggling with love and his own personal life, and De Niro's character, who's the bad guy, you know, cops and robbers, but the, you know, cops struggling with things. The bad guy's got his life pretty much the way he wants it. And, you know, how they have different romances and how one's going up and one's going down. So they kind of mirror off each other. And then you've got Val Kilmer plays one of the people in the crew, and he's erratic and problematic. But he's not so ridiculously over the top problematic that you dump him at the very next heist. It still makes sense for him to be involved. It's a very, very well-written movie and very densely written. And it does have, it's very macho. I mean, it's loaded up with testosterone. And every single female in the movie is either a prize or a bargaining chip. And that feels very 90s to me. I guess there's a certain sort of realism there, especially for the time it took. When you consider the movie is about stuff that really happened in the 60s and it was more modernized. Now it's close to 3 hours long, so they take their time. And it's nice to see a movie that takes its time but doesn't overly milk it. I mean, it's an impressive movie, especially, and everybody talks about there's a big bank heist which turns into a shootout. And it's impressive and it's intense. And I imagine on 4K, it looks and sounds amazing. But unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to see that version of it. But it still looks great. The version I saw is a neat movie. I'm glad I finally saw it. It was one of those blind spots in my cinematic knowledge that I finally revealed. And so it's worth seeing. I don't know if I'm going to watch it again because it does take a while, but you know, it's hard hitting and full of spirit. You know, Heat delivers on the action as well as the nuanced characters, raising it above a standard 90s cop drama. I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Available new on disc this week, we've got Sonic the Hedgehog 2, Crimes of the Future, and Men. And that's it. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Beast, Orphan First Kill, and She-Hulk Attorney at Law. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.